Welcome to the Choate Family Office podcast series. On this show, we explore important topics related to wealth management, investing, and managing risk across generations.
Hi, this is Tamer Alameddine of Choate Investment Advisors. I'm joined today by Joe Sicilian, Head of Research at Choate Investment Advisors. And today we're going to talk about AI from an investment perspective, what we think the impact of AI may be, and what the impact of AI has been on the stock market.
Yeah, thanks, Tamer, and thanks for the invite to chat. It's definitely a fascinating topic that's, as you say, getting a lot of attention today. But you know, people have been talking about AI since the 50s, and today most of the companies that are utilizing AI have been doing so in different ways for many years now. But clearly the excitement is reaching new highs. And so, you know, why is this? I think a couple of things here. If we first just quickly go back 10 or 15 years at a really high level, we started seeing a resurgence in an older technique used with the aim of actually advancing computer vision. That technique is known as deep learning. Deep learning utilizes systems called neural networks. And simplistically, those systems are trained off of huge amounts of data. And importantly, they have the ability to learn from this training. So the reemergence of deep learning and neural networks was surprisingly successful in making pretty sudden advancements back then, which caused a lot of excitement, and it drove a big uptick in academic research. It drove large tech companies to start investing more heavily into AI. And back then, most of the training being done was with data that had to be hand cleaned and human labeled. More recent models have developed the ability to be trained on more raw data, so without the need for human creation. Curation. At the same time, with the proliferation of software and connectivity through advancements like 5G, the amount of data being collected and analyzed has gone parabolic. This data explosion has kind of allowed the training of what are called large language models, it's just a type of neural network, on more and more parameters. So the amount of parameters AIs are being trained on continues to be eclipsed over and over, which is driving better and better systems. And then, of course, one of the recent applications that came out of these advancements that drove an incredible amount of public awareness and curiosity was the release of ChatGPT in the fall of 2022. And since then, consumers, big companies, governments, think tanks, they all have been dreaming about what this technology could eventually produce, and kind of brainstorming all the ways that products and apps can be built with AI to drive enhancements in productivity and growth. And AI should be able to help streamline a lot of clerical and administrative tasks. It'll help discover and develop new drugs. It can diagnose diseases. It can, you know, drive cars, so on and so on. And probably many use cases we can't even conceive yet. So you can see where the excitement is coming from. And some estimate that AI could double overall U.S. labor productivity growth once the technology really scales. Now, Tamara, I've heard you talk about market concentration in the past and how the top 10 companies in the S&P are about a third of the market cap of that index right now. That trend in concentration really ties into this discussion because 7 or 8 of those top 10 are significantly involved in the development of AI. We can't perfectly isolate AI spend at all these big tech companies, but between Meta and Alphabet and Amazon and Microsoft, they likely spent about $100 billion on technical infrastructure last year and will likely spend another $150 or $160 billion again this year. These companies, Microsoft, Meta, Apple, Amazon, Google, Tesla, are all investing heavily in their own AI systems to improve their own products. So, you know, this could be Google making search better, Meta targeting ads better, Tesla making advancements in autonomous driving. But in addition to this, Microsoft, Amazon, and Alphabet are layering AI supply into their existing cloud platforms. So here the idea is that the clients of the large public cloud vendors or hyperscalers will want to use their data centers to build their own AI system. So I'll back up. An example might be a company like Adobe comes up with an AI-enabled product that they want to sell to Adobe clients, but Adobe doesn't want to build their own AI infrastructure. Instead, Adobe will pay Microsoft Azure or Amazon AWS for the compute they'll need to see their product idea come to life. And then, of course, what all of these companies have in common is that they're all paying NVIDIA a lot of money. But overall, I think the recent advancements in tech, coupled with what was really a watershed moment in the minds of consumers and companies with the release of ChatGPT, that was sort of the match that lit this recent fire. And it's being stoked aggressively by big tech companies that have the balance sheets and shareholders willing to underwrite that spend today.
So Joe, you mentioned NVIDIA, and obviously NVIDIA has been front and center. Can you talk a little bit about both NVIDIA as well as the semiconductor ecosystem that is so central to this AI build out?
Yeah, sure. So it requires a tremendous amount of computing power to train a modern, sophisticated AI system. It requires a tremendous amount of compute to then inference that system or get that system to complete tasks after it's been trained. Tamer, it's really hard to even wrap our heads around some of these numbers, but basically compute can be measured in a standardized form, something called a petaflop. And we know that a competitive AI system today might require about 5 billion times the compute that a cutting edge system of just a decade ago did. So for someone to build an AI or for a public cloud to provide the compute necessary to build an AI, they need to buy a lot of hardware to meet the demands of this compute. This requires a highly advanced type of chip or semiconductor, and that's exactly what NVIDIA sells. They have a stranglehold right now on high-performance compute, and demand is outstripping supply. So NVIDIA, as you mentioned, in a lot of ways is the biggest, most immediate, and obvious beneficiary of all of this AI infrastructure spend today. And you also asked about the broader semiconductor ecosystem. And certainly, yeah, there are others in the value chain that are benefiting too. For example, NVIDIA does not manufacture their own chips, and it's incredibly complicated to manufacture today's AI chips. We're talking about chips that are microscopic. There's basically only one company that can do this right now for NVIDIA, and that's Taiwan Semiconductor, TSMC. And we can go further down the line. TSMC needs expensive, complex equipment, which is mostly supplied by one company, ASML, out of the Netherlands. So these are some of the early poster children that have emerged from the AI trend. And as far as who's purchasing all these chips, well, we've talked about some of the biggest cloud providers. And as a whole, they make up about 40% of NVIDIA's data center revenue right now. Beyond these three, more very important customers come to mind, which would be Meta, Tesla, and Apple. Big AI startups like OpenAI, more recently, Sovereigns have actually begun building capabilities too. So there is a level of customer concentration, but a broadening of that customer base lately for NVIDIA as well.
So Joe, one of the other things that's come to the fore is the amount of power that this compute needs. What are some of the knock-on effects from this build-out on other sectors that people don't traditionally pair with technology?
Yeah, certainly. Power is definitely another bottleneck and a knock-on effect. A typical AI data center consumes about 4 to 8 times the energy of a traditional server. And by the end of the decade, AI electricity is estimated to double the growth rate of total US electricity demand. So hyperscalers are all clamoring to find power for their buildouts. Amazon has signed big deals in Tahoe, Google in Austin. The deals keep pouring in and they're huge, but significantly backlogged. And in the last year alone, power deals signed by cloud providers have been roughly equivalent to adding an entire New York City to the grid. And there are a host of companies that could benefit, but they typically are not as pure plays as the NVIDIA scenario that I just mentioned, where it may be one division within a company or the immediate spend is less clear cut. Now, of course, we have a great team of analysts parsing all of this out and trying to quantify who could be the biggest winners of the power bottleneck and, you know, how that's reflected in their stock prices today. And so companies that we've been diligencing and digging into are those that help enable increased grid capacity or just general energy efficiency, and sometimes more specific things like liquid cooling. So these are companies like Aquanta Services, Vertiv and Eaton, Johnson Controls, Trane, et cetera.
Joe, of course, one of the big fears whenever people talk about enthusiasm and technology is a repeat of the dot-com bubble. What are some of the similarities that you see with the late 90s or the differences from that period? And what would you frame out as the risks you see for investors?
Yeah, of course. Okay, Tamara, I'll probably talk too long to answer this question. So I'll just say up front that so far, I personally do not think we are in dot-com bubble level territory right now. I'm not really seeing concerning levels of kind of analogous traits or valuations to that period today. Back then, we had the four horsemen, and Dell, Cisco, Microsoft, and Intel. Today, we have the Magnificent Seven, of course. But the NASDAQ traded closer to 100 times forward earnings during that bubble versus about 27 times today. Large cap tech companies are enjoying 30% free cash flow margins today versus single digit margins at the dot-com peak. And, you know, we talked about the top 10 that make up a third of the index today. Well, they also make up about a third of the expected net income over the for the S&P 500 over the next year too. And their earnings are growing at a much faster clip than the rest of the market. So I do definitely understand the fear that you're asking about. NVIDIA's stock is up about 10 times since its 2022 bottom, and it's not like it was a small company back then. And that is certainly a move in size and speed that is reminiscent of past bubbles. But, you know, we can take NVIDIA as an example here and look under the hood and see some pretty logical arguments for why this move happened too. You know, at the 2022 bottom, NVIDIA was trading at 27 times the forward earnings. The multiples expanded since then, but so have NVIDIA's returns on capital, and so have NVIDIA's growth outlook. And today it's around 33 times. And I think in Q1 of that year, they did less than $4 billion in data center revenue. And Q1 of this year, it was closer to $23 billion and still growing 400%. And keep in mind, These are dollars, Tamara. These aren't eyeballs or clicks. You know, NVIDIA is a highly, highly profitable company. They have 60% operating margins. And, you know, from that point in 2022, the fiscal year 25 earnings outlook went up five times. And I'll just quickly in this vein, but very importantly, they've continued to increase their pace of innovation and kind of proven that their first early dominant AI chips were not one-hit wonders to be kind of quickly dethroned. And each quarter, we're getting comments from NVIDIA customers on their outlook for the magnitude and duration of the spend, and those only continue to go up. Now, just because we may not be exactly repeating the biggest bubble of the past 30 years doesn't mean that there aren't risks. And you know, I think in general, the market tends to overestimate big trends in the near term, but underestimates them in the longer run. And there's probably an element of that happening today. And so the way I'd frame the risks is at a high level, I kind of think about two key risks that are a bit separate from each other. First, the builders of this AI supply, the big spenders we're talking about, they don't yet have perfect visibility into the ultimate return of the spend. It's, you know, it's early, but this year Microsoft will likely need to spend $1 on AI specific investments to generate just 10 to 15% in AI specific revenue. The demand for what they're building will likely not come on in like a tidy straight line. It may hit air pockets, and the market's expectations for that ultimate return will likely gyrate around a bit. I also worry that there is a degree of kind of FOMO or defense that's fueling the spend. The cost
Joe, one second. What do you mean by FOMO?
Yeah, sure. So that stands for fear of missing out. And again, so I think this fear of missing out is certainly a driver here, which, you know, presents itself as a risk. And I mentioned that because there is some precedent for this happening in the past, right? The sting of missing out on big trends is still fresh for some of these mega cap tech companies. You know, Microsoft missed mobile, just one got surge. Apple and Meta don't have public clouds, and so on. So again, this is sort of the broad risk that I see for the big spenders, is that, you know, the cost of missing this big trend is probably higher than the cost of building too much supply in the near term. So separate from that, I think a second risk that is more specific to the immediate beneficiaries, where, you know, where this spend is going today. You know, as I said, there are basically monopolies within the semiconductor ecosystem. But those monopolies likely have expiration dates on them, and those dates are unknown for now. With NVIDIA, for example, other big chip companies, as well as their own customers, are working really hard to develop competing technology and to become less reliant on NVIDIA in the future. So the dynamic I probably spend the most time thinking about today is that we may be getting to a point where it's going to be more of a zero-sum game between some of these tech darlings. For example, in some ways, I think you can either think that you're paying a reasonable price for Microsoft, or you can think that NVIDIA's data center revenue estimates are way too low, but not as much both. If Microsoft continues this pace of investment without inadequate return, the price investors are paying over the next few years for Microsoft is quite high, but NVIDIA will continue to benefit from it. If, on the other hand, Microsoft pairs back, they look cheaper, but NVIDIA's business will slow, and that will likely compress its valuation. I'm just not sure you can have it both ways indefinitely. So I don't see an alarming amount of parallels to the dot-com bubble, but we're watching and on the margin being a bit more selective.
Well, great, Joe. Thanks so much. A lot to pay attention to in the AI space. And for now, we kind of know the immediate winners. But another lesson from I'll leave our clients with is that the winners from the dot-com era didn't materialize until several years after the dot-com bubble burst. And we should expect something similar here, where some of the biggest AI beneficiaries may not even be around just yet. Thanks again, everyone.
The information provided in this recording is for informational purposes only. While Choate and Choate Investment Advisors make every attempt to present accurate information, the information on this recording may not be appropriate for your specific circumstances, and it may become outdated over time. The views expressed on this podcast should not be construed as advice for your given situation. If you have questions about your specific situation, you should consult your attorney for legal advice, and you should consult your financial advisor. Moreover, Choate Investment Advisors may decide to select investments on a different basis at any time and without prior notice. Finally, as everyone should know, past performance is not a guarantee of future performance.